The Forsyte Chronicles by John Galsworthy, dramatized by David Spencer. With Dirk Bogarde as Galsworthy, Alan Howard as Soames, Amanda Redman as Fleur, Gary Bond as Michael, and Gary Cady as John. Episode 14.
On the day of the case, Soames rose at Winifred's in Green Street with a sort of sick impatience. Having cleaned his teeth, put in his plate and brushed his hair, Soames went into the adjoining room where his wife was dressing.
I took a lunar at Mr. Justice Brain yesterday afternoon.
Yes?
I was quite favourably impressed. He's changed a good deal from when I used to know him. You're wearing pink underclothes.
Yes?
I should wear black.
Whom do you want me to fascinate, Soames?
These people will bring their friends, I shouldn't wonder. And anything conspicuous...
Don't be afraid. I shall not try to be younger than my daughter.
The French. Well, she has good taste in dress. Oh, I wish this circus was over and it was tomorrow. Why didn't I insist on Fleur apologizing? Well, there could be the devil to pay. There's no telling what could happen in a court of law.
Millard, I shall now call Mrs. Ralph Pinring.
How do you spell that name, Mr. Bulfrey?
With two P's, two Y's, two N's, and two R's, Millard.
I see. Call Mrs. Ralph Pinring.
Fleur sat between her father and her husband. The courtroom was crowded. Marjorie Farrar was, after all, one of those personalities constantly before the public eye.
I received Mrs. Mont's libelous letter 2 days after the unfortunate incident in Mrs. Mont's drawing room.
And you showed it to Miss Farrar?
I thought it my duty as a friend.
Would you describe this letter as harmful?
I should say, as a woman in society, that this incident and these letters have done Miss Farrar harm. I talked it over with a good many people. It was such a public incident and excited a lot of feeling. So I showed my letter to Mrs. Maltese, who showed me a letter she had received from Mrs. Mont. The whole affair had become a subject for public gossip.
Flippity-gibbet type, but a good-looking woman.
I see. Thank you, Mrs. Pinring.
Fleur looks good. A little pale, perhaps, but creamy. And good taste, that plain blue dress. Nothing modern, thank goodness. As for Michael, well, his ears look very pointed. Oh, and there's that insolent red-haired cat, smiling. Bulfrey's an ugly-looking customer. I might have done better to have briefed him and let the other side have Foskerson.
Now, Mrs. Pinring.
Ah, let's see how Foskerson shapes.
This incident, as my friend has called it, happened at the house of Mrs. Mont, did it not?
Yes.
And how did you come there?
I was invited, naturally, by Mrs. Mont.
As a friend, quite so. And you have nothing against Mrs. Mont?
Certainly not.
No. And you thought it advisable and kind, madam, to show this letter to the plaintiff and to other people. In fact, to foment this little incident to the best of your ability.
Well, I'd seen worse. The eye fixed on space for the question, coming round for the answer.
In fact, madam, you enjoyed the whole thing, didn't you?
Enjoyed? No.
You regarded it as your duty to spread this letter. Don't you enjoy doing your duty?
Impossible to tell what Fleur's feeling. Why ever did she go and write those letters in the first place?
Mrs. Edward Maltese.
Call Mrs. Edward Maltese.
Another busybody relishing her moment in the public eye.
Do you think your section of society as advanced as Miss Ferrars?
Perhaps not.
Still, your section is pretty advanced. I mean, you're not stuffy.
Not what, Sir James?
Stuffy, my lord. It's an expression a good deal used in modern society.
What does it mean?
Straight-laced, my lad.
I see. Well, he's asking you if you're stuffing.
No, my lord. I hope not.
You hope not. Go on, Sir James.
I wonder what the jury make of her. Why are juries always common-looking? I wonder who's creating the more satisfying effect, Fleur or that cat?
I call the plaintiff, Milan.
Call Miss Marjorie Farrar.
Marjorie Farrar stepped into the box, not exactly nervous and only just made up. She wore a black costume with a chinchilla fur and a black hat.
Miss Farrar, would you say that you feel or have felt any animosity against Mrs. Mont?
No.
Marjorie Farrar was soothed by Mr. Balfrey's carefully adjusted voice. His questions were familiar, and with each answer, her confidence increased, and she felt her performance was interesting to the judge, the jury, and all the people present in the crowded courtroom.
Thank you, Miss Farrar.
Mr. Balfrey sat down. Sir James Foskison got up. While he turned his papers and hitched his gown, the first tremor passed down Marjorie Farrar's spine.
You have told my friend that you had no animus against Mrs. Mont. Look at this marked paragraph in the Evening Sun of October the 3rd. Yeah? Did you write that?
Yes, I wrote it.
Not very nice, is it? Of a friend?
I don't see any harm in it.
No harm, indeed. I'm glad Fleur didn't eat humble pie to that red-haired baggage.
Did you go to many houses and talk disparagingly of your hostess?
No. And in any case, I don't expect to be eavesdropped.
I see. So long as you're not found out, it's all right. Eh?
And then Sir James was holding up a book.
Have you read this novel, Canthor?
Canthor was an advanced book published because of its eroticism abroad. Marjorie Farrar had indeed read it. Thought it was literature, though not great literature, and thought the book should be published in England.
Do you believe in current morality yourself?
I don't know what you call current morality.
I will tell you, Miss Farrar. I should say, for instance, it was current morality that women should not have liaisons before they are married and should not have them after.
What about men?
Thank you. I was coming to men. And that men should at least not have them after.
I shouldn't say that was current morality at all.
Do I understand you to imply that in your view it is moral for women to have liaison before marriage and for men and women to have them after?
I think it's current morality, my lord.
I'm not asking you about current morality. I'm asking you whether in your view it is moral.
I think many people think it's all right who don't say it yet.
Answer my question, please. Do you say it is all right?
I think it depends.
On what?
On circumstances, environment, temperament, all sorts of things.
Would it be all right for you?
I can't answer that question, my lord.
You mean you don't want to?
I mean, I don't know.
Marjorie Farrar looked as if she had walked out of a greenhouse into an east wind.
I don't propose, my lad, to read from this very unpleasant novel. Owing apparently to its unsavoury reputation, a copy of it now costs nearly £7. We have gone to the considerable expense of buying copies. And I shall ask that during the luncheon interval, the jury may read some dozen marked passages.
Have you a copy for me, Sir James?
Yes, my lord.
And one for Mr. Balfrey? If there is any laughter, I shall have the court cleared.
And then Sir James was holding a copy of The Plain Dealer by Wycherley.
You took the part of Olivia not for money, but for pleasure. You enjoyed playing it?
Pretty well.
I'm afraid I shall have to ask the jury, my lad, to run their eyes over the dark scene in The Plain Dealer.
Are you saying, Sir James, that a woman who plays an immoral part is not moral? That would asperse a great many reputations.
No, my love. I'm saying that here is a young lady so jealous of her good name in the eyes of the world that she brings a libel action because someone has said in a private letter that she hasn't a moral about her. And at the same time, she is reading and approving books like this canto, playing parts like that of Olivia in The Plain Dealer, and, as I submit, living in a section of society that really doesn't know the meaning of the word morals.
If you want the jury to read that scene as well, you will have a busy luncheon interval, gentlemen. Go on, Sir James.
Miss Ferrar, my friend made a point of the fact that you are engaged to a wealthy and highly respected member of Parliament. Did you bring this action because of your good name? Wasn't it because you were hard up?
No.
Were you hard up when you brought it?
Yes.
I put it to you that you owed a great deal of money and were hard pressed.
If you like.
And you didn't bring this action with a view to paying some of your debts?
No.
Did you in early January become aware that you are not likely to get any sum in settlement of this suit?
I believe I was told that an offer was withdrawn.
And do you know why?
Yes, because Mrs. Mont wouldn't give the apology I asked for.
Exactly. And was it coincidence that you thereupon made up your mind to marry Sir Alexander McGann?
Coincidence?
I mean the announcement of your engagement, you know.
Glad I selected him. He's good, very good. Better than Bulfrey.
You believe in being the sole judge of your own conduct?
Yes.
It's the view, in fact, of what may be called the forward wing of modern society, isn't it? The wing you belong to and are proud of belonging to.
More or less.
And living in that circle, with that belief, you have the effrontery to think the words, "she hasn't a moral about her," entitles you to damages?
I have morals. They may not be yours, but they may be just as good, perhaps better. I'm not a hypocrite anyway.
Aha, she's lost her temper and she's made Foskison lose his.
Miss Ferrar, his lordship put a general question to you which you did not feel able to answer. I am going to put it in a way that will be easier for you. Whether or no it was right for you to have one, have you, in fact, had a liaison?
Good Lord, sir, it's not going to bring up Bertie Curfew.
Michael,
shh!
Take your time, Miss Ferrar. You know what a liaison is, of course.
Stop this!
I consider your question insulting.
Oh, come, Miss Ferrar. After your own words? After what?
Well, I shan't answer it.
You won't answer it?
No.
Thank you, Miss Ferrar.
I shall break for luncheon now, Mr. Goldfrain.
She has cooked her goose. They'll drop it like a hot potato. I've told Foskison he can settle, with both sides paying their own costs. It's more than they deserve.
He ought never to have asked that question, sir.
Really, Michael?
Well, darling, we agreed he shouldn't. Why didn't Bulfrey help her out, sir?
Only too glad to get her out of the box. The judge would have asked her himself in another minute. It's a complete fiasco. Thank God.
Then we've won.
Unless I'm a Dutchman.
I'm not so sure.
I tell you, it's all over. Bulfrey will never go on with it.
I didn't mean that, sir.
Then what do you mean, Michael?
Well, I dare say I'm all wrong.
Well?
I don't think we shall be forgiven, that's all.
Ah, there's young Nicholas. Wait here, I'll find out exactly what's happening.
She should have told a good one and had done with it. I couldn't help feeling sorry for her.
You'd feel sorry for a flea that bit you, Michael. What do you mean by our not being forgiven?
Well, the drama was all on her side, and it's drama that counts. Besides, there's her engagement.
That'll be broken off.
Exactly, and if it is, she'll have sympathy. While if it isn't, he'll have it. Anyway, we shan't. Besides, you know, she stood up for what we all really believe nowadays.
Speak for yourself.
Well, don't we talk of everyone being free?
Yes, but is there any connection between what we say and what we do?
No.
father looks happy.
Well, sir.
Well, as I told you, Palfrey courted it. They've settled. It's a moral victory.
Oh, not moral, I hope, sir. We'll be identified with the Inquisition.
Well, Alec.
I've been waiting for you. Tell me the truth, Marjorie. I'm in torment.
Who was it knew me better than I knew myself?
The truth, Marjorie. The truth.
Oh, really, Alec? In exchange for your adventures, I'll tell you mine.
For God's sake, don't mock me. I've had hell these last hours.
I said you'd be taking a toss over me, Alec. Why on earth did you insist on me bringing this case? You've had it your way, and now you don't like it.
It's true, then?
Yes, why not?
Who was he?
Oh, no. I can't possibly tell you. And how many affairs have you had? Oh, well. Cigarette?
No.
No? You're well out of me.
How long did it last?
Nearly a year.
By God! No! Oh, my God.
Oh, those stuffy passions of his. How stupid and pre-war. Why can't he take life as it comes, like I do? Prejudices, principles. Oh, well, good riddance. Fancy living with a man, sharing the same bed with a man who goes off his chump with jealousy. Primitive. Life's a dance. A dance. On with the dance, Marjorie. Oh, Lord, I can't let him pay my debts now, even if he wants to. Married, I could at least have paid him back with my body. Now... Oh, what a bore it is. Why doesn't someone just die and leave me something?
Marquis's granddaughter, dramatic evidence.
What morality attack?
Liaison question unanswered.
Well, Mr. Francis Wilmot, I thought you were through with that fool business.
I sail tomorrow.
Sail? Well, then.
I read the evening papers.
For heaven's sake, Francis, don't say you come out of chivalry. That'd be too funny.
I don't follow you. I just thought, perhaps, you didn't like to answer that question about a love affair because of me.
Because of you? Oh, no. No, my dear.
I shouldn't have come.
Oh. Freelance again now, Francis. Oh, then, for God's sake, go away. I'm fed up. No, that does surprise me. He's gone. He's a new variety. Or an old one, dead and dug up. Doesn't know the rudiments of life. But I do. I haven't lost my courage. Tomorrow's Bellamy Gussie's at home. Everyone will be there. And so shall I.
Yes, everyone was at Bellamy Gussie's. In one of Anglo-American birth, inexhaustible wealth, and Catholic taste, the word hostess had found its highest expression. Her two husbands had passed on, having met in their time nearly everybody. The house was a house of consequence. In that great pillared salon were present members of Parliament, artists, peers, physicians, labour leaders, cricketers, critics, ladies of fashion, and ladies who couldn't bear it. They were present too, Mr. and Mrs. Mott.
Hello, Molly.
And Miss Marjorie Farrar.
Excuse me.
I must go to Fleur.
Oh, yes.
She stopped only a small woman's length from Fleur. It's a deliberate challenge.
The long, tapering nose of society could be seen to pooch, move delicately upwards, capturing the whiff of sensation.
Hello, darling.
We saw you deep in conversation with Pevensey Bly, didn't we, Molly? And we guessed the topic of conversation, Fobbertism.
That and the state of the country.
Oh, that's a dismal subject. Molly says the Bloomsbury lot are here in force. Isn't that awe-inspiring? Molly says the new book is very weird and beautiful.
Fleur talked and twisted a flower in her hand. Marjorie Farrar stood smiling and composed. Both went on looking their best. So began a battle without a sign of war declared, without even apparent recognition of each other's presence. The tide seemed at balance, not moving in or out.
Apparently, darling, Luigi Sforza is not only one of the world's most celebrated violinists, he's also quite a character. He actually chartered a special steamer to keep an engagement in North America.
Excuse me, Fleur. I've just seen somebody I must say hello to.
Of course, Molly, dear.
And then, with the slow implacability of time...
Marjorie, dear, how nice to see you.
The water moved away from Fleur and lapped around her life.
That's some big
ambition.
Not very much of it, sweetie.
Do people admire, commiserate, approve of, or just sympathize with her?
Marjorie! Do tell me where you found that delicious outfit.
Well, it's dashed natural after all. Why didn't Hospice and take me to? Let us pay and look pleasant.
He's tired out, flying by a minute.
I was with your grandfather the other day, Marjorie. He's still king, you know, on complete electrification.
By George, there goes Bertie Curfew. And behind him, McGowan himself. Oh, the humour of the gods has run amok.
And he was asked to preside over a South American republic.
Fleur.
Oh, my dear.
Let's go.
Why should you care, Michael? You still got your foggertism. And Nora Curfew at Bethnal Green.
If you care, Fleur, I care a lot.
If?
Why is it so important?
I'd rather not increase your feeling that I'm a snob.
I've never felt that.
Oh, Michael!
You appreciate having people about you. That isn't being a snob.
But you don't admire it.
I admire you.
You mean desire me. You admire Nora Curfew.
Oh, Nora Curfew. For all I care, she might snuff out tomorrow.
Well, if it isn't her, it's what she stands for. Or that I'm not.
I admire a lot in you. Intelligence, flair. I admire you with Kit and your father. Your pluck. And the way you put up with me.
No. I admire you much more than you admire me. Only, you see, I'm not capable of devotion.
Oh, what about Kit?
I'm devoted to myself, that's all.
Oh, morbid, darling.
No. I see too clearly to be morbid. Michael, I want you to take me round the world.
And leave Kit?
He's too young to mind. Besides, my mother would look after him.
But your father, you...
He's not really old yet, and he'd have Kit.
When we rise in August, perhaps.
No, now.
It's only 5 months to wait.
I knew you cared more for Foggertism than me. If you can't feel that
I felt wild this evening. But only let them see that you don't care, and they'll come buzzing round you like flies. It would be running away, Fleur.
No, it's not that. I don't try twice for the same prize. Very well, I'll stay and be laughed at.
I know you don't think there's anything to my job, but there is, Fleur. Oh, don't look like that. Dash it, this is dreadful.
I suppose I could go by myself.
Oh, absurd, of course you couldn't. Darling, it'll all seem different tomorrow.
Tomorrow, tomorrow. No, Michael, mortification has set in. My funeral can take place any day you like.
Look, give me a week. It's not easy, I must think it over.
Where have you sprung from?
I happened to be passing, sir, on my old bike.
Oh?
Had a sudden longing for the country.
How's Fleur?
Well, I wanted to tell you about her, sir. She's awfully restless.
Well, she oughtn't to be with that case out of the way.
That's just it, sir.
I don't follow you.
We're being cold-shouldered.
How? You won!
Yes, but you see, people resent moral superiority.
What's that? Who?
We're tired with Foskerson's brush.
To attack modern morality was a good stunt, sir, with the judge and the jury and anyone professionally pompous. It makes one ridiculous nowadays in society, you know, when everybody prides himself on lack of prejudice.
Society.
Yes, sir, but it's what we live in.
Well, she ought to have more strength of mind.
She wants to go round the world.
The devil she does.
But I simply can't leave my job until the long vacation. It's only today that I finally decided. She doesn't know my decision yet.
Round the world? Well, why not Italy?
I think she wants something dramatic.
I must see her. Can you leave that thing of yours in the garage and come up with me in the car? I'll be ready in 20 minutes. You'll find tea going indoors.
Are you tired, my child? See what I've brought you. It's a chardin. I thought it would go well with that Fragonard. Michael tells me you want him to take you round the world.
Well, he can't, so that ends it.
What business have they to look down their confounded noses? I don't see how I can take you.
Of course not, Dad. Oh, I'll get used to being laughed at. In time.
I don't see why you should. Well, I suppose people do go round the world.
But not you, dear. Why, it would bore you stiff. It's very sweet of you even to think of it, but of course I couldn't let you, at your age.
At my age? I'm not so very old.
No, no, Dad.
I won't have it. If people can't behave to you, I'll show them. We'll go.
But you
don't make a fuss. That's settled.
Goodbye, Michael. It's not for very long.
Well, goodbye, darling. Take care of yourself. I'll join you in August wherever you are. You shall have all the news I can send you.
Use the wireless.
I will, and don't worry about Kit. Goodbye, sir.
Plenty of quinine and a heavy pith helmet. That's what an Englishman needs. Blair says she's not a good sailor. There's nothing like champagne for that, I'm told. I hope the little chap isn't missing his mother too much. And I hope Annette doesn't go getting into a mess with the cows. The mother's there, of course, but women are so funny. Especially French ones. The wars left everything very unsettled. Multum ex parvo, parvum ex multo. That's the modern comedy. No question of Russia, thank goodness. It's all to pieces now, they say. Communism. Nor China, of course, not with the situation as it is. I'm happier about Fleur. She's quite over that unpleasant Ferrar business. The Sphinx, Japan, the Taj Mahal, they've all helped. And there was young Michael at Vancouver Harbour. Fleur's on excellent terms with him now. Rocky Mountains, all that water at Niagara, those skyscrapers in New York. Not houses people can live in, of course. But I could take a real fancy to this place.
In Washington, District of Columbia, the fall sun shone, and all that was not evergreen or stone in Rock Creek Cemetery was glowing. Before the St. Gaudens statue, Soames Forsyte sat on his overcoat, enjoying the seclusion.
Here we are, Anne.
An English voice? I suppose they're going to chatter.
John, it's terribly great.
No, it can't be. Impossible.
Everlasting stillness. Makes me sad, John.
My God, it is. No doubt of it. Young John Forsyte, and that must be his wife. What a mischance.
It's the greatest man-made thing in America, Anne. We haven't anything so good at home.
They mustn't meet. a ridiculous, a dangerous encounter.
We'll have to go to Egypt.
I've travelled for 6 months to restore Fleur's peace of mind. I'm not going to have her upset again for the world.
Egypt? Oh, your mother would just love that, John. Oh, and so would I.
Yes, as likely as not, she's here. Irene.
Come and see it from the other side.
Oh, they didn't see me. Well, Washington's a big place. I must find my driver. America's all cars and newspapers. What if they put our names among the arrivals?
Hotel Potomac.
Hotel Potomac?
If you prefer it.
Reaching his hotel, Soames went at once to the kiosk and bought a newspaper.
Mr. and Mrs. Cyrus K. McGum, Mrs. Ellick, Mr. H. Yellum Root, Mr. Semmes Forsyth, Mr. and Mrs. Munt. Semmes Forsyth Munt. Hopefully unrecognizable. The register.
Going over to the bureau, Soames turned the register towards him.
Mr. and Mrs. Jolyon Forsyth, here, at this hotel. And there, a day before, the Mrs. Irene Forsyth. I must deal with this at once.
After lunch, Soames arranged to have his daughter and son-in-law driven to Mount Vernon.
Oh, they've done the place extraordinarily well. Too much George Washington, of course. But good, old, original stuff. Well, one must remember America wasn't run up yesterday.
Absolutely topping.
Ah, there's young Michael.
Jolly good taste in those days. All handmade, you see.
What? They've met. Is Fleur with them? No, thank Lord. Must find her. Must find Fleur. Can't have her apple cart upset again.
I am so sorry. I'm looking for my daughter.
Oh, you're English.
Indeed, madam. Yes.
Oh, I must take Fleur away while those three are in the dining room. Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, fascinating.
There she is, talking to the curator.
Fleur!
Why, Dad?
Fleur, I'm not feeling quite the thing. I must go to the car.
Dad, what is it?
I don't know. Giddy, give me your arm. I've been doing too much, I expect. I'll just sit quiet in the car.
We'd better get back to the hotel, dear, at once, so that you can lie down.
Yes, there's a great fuss about nothing.
There. Raise your head, dear. Does that music worry you?
No. I rather like it.
It's a very good touch.
Yes. Now, you finish your packing before you and Michael go to the opera. I'm all right again now.
Are you sure?
Quite sure.
All right, dear.
Oh, I'll telephone for a cab presently. Don't want you hanging about in that lobby.
You think of everything.
A light touch. Irene's touch. Is it her playing? That young Bossini listening to her in Montpelier Square. And she was always stopping when I came in. If I had appreciated music more? Nonsense. Gardenias in her hair. Eyes of velvet. Skin. Oh, is one never to forget? Is it her playing? How strange to be under the same roof as her after all these years. Is it her? Strange. Would I go through it again? Not for the world. And yet...
Soames got up and went to the little salon where he'd already noticed the piano. Three pillars, with spaces between them, divided the salon from the corridor. At the first of these pillars, he stopped.
She. It is she. Yes, her shoulders, her neck, her arms still rounded and beautiful. If I'm 70, she must be nearly 62 and still beautiful. There, at that piano, sits a woman I've never known. That was always the worst of her faults, her infernal mystery.
Stepping silently like a cat, Soames regained his room.
Old. I feel old. The sight of that woman. No, I'm not going to be old. I'll think of the future, of the little chap, and of an England that has found out where it's going.
Well, Michael?
It's on.
What a bore.
A few months after the month's return to England, at the beginning of May 1926, the crisis that the government and the TUC had both tried to prevent occurred. The general strike.
I wish we had a Mussolini.
Michael went out directly after breakfast. People and cars are streaming in over Westminster Bridge. No buses ran, no trams. But motor lorries, full or empty, rumbled past. Some specials were out already, and everybody had a look as if they were going to a tea party, cloaked in a kind of defiant jollity. The big railway stations were picketed, but they were running trains already with volunteer labour.
These fellows will want feeding, Fleur. Will you help me run a railway canteen for volunteers?
Well, dear boy,
it'll mean frightfully hard work and getting anybody we can to help. Well, I dare say we could rope in Nora Curfew and her gang from Bethnal Green for a start. But it's your quick head that's wanted. And your way with men.
All right, dear boy. If you say so.
Pretty Polly. Who's a pretty girl?
Winifred Darcy, now in her 68th year, had not followed too closely the events which led up to the strike. Acting, however, on her brother Soames' advice, she had filled her cellars with coal and her cupboards with groceries. And her telephone worked. She received three phone calls. The first voice was distinguished.
My name's Stainford. I'm an old college friend of your son Val.
Can I give him a message?
Well, thanks. I want to see him. I'll ring up again, or take my chance later. Thanks.
And then Val rang.
Oh, Val, how nice. Isn't this strike absurd?
Silly asses. I say we're coming up.
Really, dear? But why? You'll be so much more comfortable in the country.
Holly says we've got to do things. I'm going to drive a bus.
But isn't a bus very large, dear?
A cart horse of a thing. I say, who do you think turned up last night? Holly's brother, young John Forsyte.
Really?
Left his wife and mother in Paris. Said he'd missed the war and couldn't afford to miss this. Says he really wants to muck in, going to stoke an engine.
Why not come to me, dear? I've plenty of everything.
Well, there's young John. I don't think...
He's a nice boy, isn't he?
Uncle Soames isn't with you, is he?
Oh, no, dear. He's at Mapledurham.
Well, if you don't mind putting us up, Mother. Can't leave young John out, you know. He and Holly are very thick after 6 years.
Oh, that'll be quite all right, dear.
I say, Holly says she'll want a job. You might ask young Mont. He's in with people.
Then Soames rang.
I'm coming up to Fleur's.
But why, Soames? I should have thought you'd
been... be on the spot in case of accidents. This may lead to anything.
Ought one to sell anything, Soames?
Certainly not.
Val's going to drive a bus. Oh, and Soames, that young John Forsyte is back.
What?
He's left his wife and mother in Paris and come over to be a stoker.
What's he want to do that for? It's much better keep out of England.
Yes. I suppose Fleur...
Don't you go putting things into her head.
Of course not, Soames. So I shall see you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Fleur and John Forsyte. Oh, dear Polly.
As Holly wanted a volunteer's job, Winifred Darty suggested to Fleur that Holly should help in the canteen.
I saw John in there, Holly. Where has he dropped from?
Paris. He's putting up with us in Green Street.
When, looking down the row of faces at her canteen table, Fleur saw John Forsyte. It was within her heart as if, in winter, she had met with honeysuckle.
Quaint to see him again, all smudgy like that. His wife with him?
Oh, not yet. She's in Paris still, with his mother.
Oh, it'd be fun to see him sometime.
Oh, yes. His wife wants to come over and help. Would you like her in the canteen?
If she's the right sort?
John says very much so.
I don't see why an American should worry herself. Are they going to live in England?
Yes.
Oh, well, we're both over the measles.
Well, I'm off to Val at Aunt Winifred's.
Michael's collecting me in the car, a present from Dad when we return from seeing the world.
If you get measles when you're grown up, Fleur, they're pretty bad.
No fear. La, 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 la.
That chap Stainford came to see me at Mother's today, Holly.
Oh, yes.
I knew him at college.
Nice to see old friends again.
Wanted me to lend him money. I once did when I was jolly hard up myself and never got it back.
Did you lend him any?
Only a fiver.
Well, don't lend him any more.
Hardly. Know what he's done? Pocketed that Louis Kahn snuff box of Mother's that's worth about 200.
Good heavens.
Mother wants to prosecute. It belonged to my granddad. But how can we? A college pal. Besides, we shouldn't get the box back.
Well, do you know his address?
He said the Brummel Club would find him. Pretty peculiar haunt, if I remember. Uncle Soames is going to see him. To come to sneaking things like that, it's upset me frightfully.
Oh, Val.
Mr. Stainford, I think?
Yes. My name's Forsyte. You called at my sister's in Green Street yesterday afternoon.
Will you sit down?
No. I just wanted to ask you a question. During your call, did you by any chance happen to notice a Louis Kahn's snuff box on the table? It's disappeared, and we want to fix the time of its loss.
Afraid not.
I'm sorry. The thing had virtue as an heirloom. It has obviously been stolen.
Oh, sorry I can't help you. I noticed nothing but some rather good marquetry.
The thing's unique. The police won't have much difficulty. Well, thanks very much. I apologize for troubling you. You knew my nephew at college, I believe. Good morning.
Good morning.
That fellow has it, I'm sure.
Soames went down to the Green Park.
Sneak thief. A gentleman to come to that.
He walked back towards Green Street. Debouching from the park, he saw on the opposite side of Piccadilly a languid figure also moving in the direction of Green Street. And Soames followed him.
By George! The fellow is going to Winifred's. I'll astonish his weak nerves.
Ah, Mr. Stainford. Come to return the snuff box?
Depends. How much?
How much?
You can have it for £10.
I can have it for nothing by asking a policeman to step here.
You won't do that.
And why not?
Not done.
Not done? Why on earth not? Most barefaced thing I ever knew.
£10. I want them badly. There isn't a policeman in sight. I have the box here. £10.
Well, for brass.
Thanks very much. Here it is. Good morning.
Well, that's a specimen they can't produce now.
John Forsyte's wife, Anne, arrived in England on the Friday. On the Saturday, Arlie brought her to the canteen to meet Fleur.
I think it's awfully sporting of you as an American. How's your brother, Francis?
Oh, you were just too good to Francis. He always talks of you. If it hadn't been for you...
That's nothing. Did you have a good crossing?
Frightful. I was glad John wasn't with me. I do so hate being green, don't you?
I never am.
I think it's wonderful of you to let me come and help.
Not a bit. Hollywell put you wise.
Oh, that sounds nice and homey.
Oh, we all use your expressions now. Will you take her provisioning, Holly?
Yes, of course. Come along, Anne.
John hasn't told her. I can tell by her face.
She's awfully young. I didn't have a youth. I would have had if John had not been taken away from me. But this time, no one's going to put a finger in any pie I care to make. John and I are no longer babes in the wood.
What's your opinion of the strike as a weapon, sir?
Oh, for the purposes of suicide, perfect.
Yes, but what's the alternative?
Well, they've got a vote.
Oh, yes, that's always said. But somehow there's a directive sense in the country now which seems to settle things before we get down to them in Parliament. Look at this strike, for instance. And we can do nothing about it.
Well, Parliament always was a talking shop, but I shouldn't like to see it done away with. By the way, that John Forsyte is over here. They tell me he's staying at Green Street and stoking an engine or something. Oh, it's a boy and girl affair, but I thought you ought to know.
Oh, thanks. I hadn't heard.
I don't think she has either. I told Winifred not to tell her.
Whitebird! Whitebird! Aim and destroy! Potato!
Strike over! Strike over! Piper!
Anne thinks you're wonderful, Flair.
Does she? Oh, good.
Her canteen had re-established in Flair the social confidence which the Marjorie Farrar affair had so severely shaken.
Holly, no one's told John's wife that he and I were once in love, I suppose.
Oh, no.
And I'd rather they didn't, then.
Of course not, my dear. I'll see to it. The child's nice, I think.
Nice, but not important.
You've got to allow for the utter strangeness of everything. Americans are generally important, sooner or later.
To themselves. Well, so long as they get on. They do, I suppose.
My dear, I've hardly seen John, but I should say it's perfectly successful. Now the strike's over, they're coming down to us at Wansdon.
Oh, good. Well, this is the end of the old canteen.
Yes, I suppose so.
God bless you, as they say, and give John my love. I'd ask them to lunch, but you're off to Wansdon?
Yes, the day after tomorrow.
I may look in at Aunt Winifred's, if I have time. So long.
So long, Fleur.
How am I going to see John alone before he leaves for Wansdon? I could call openly at Green Street, but then he mightn't be there. Ask him to lunch? Then I'd have to ask his wife and Michael. No, it'll have to be by accident. I could go to Green Street early in the morning to consult Holly about the canteen accounts. Holly and Anne will both probably be breakfasting in bed. Val's gone back to Wansdon. Aunt Winifred never gets up. John just might be alone.
Fleur!
Well, John, Smither told me you were the only one having breakfast. Did I feed you nicely at the canteen?
Splendidly.
It's nearly 6 years, John. You haven't changed much.
Nor you.
Oh, I have.
Well, I don't see it. Have you had breakfast?
Yes. Sit down and go on with yours. I came round to see Holly about the accounts. Is she in bed too?
I expect so.
Well, I'll go up directly.
Anne will be so disappointed. She's having a line.
How's the poetry?
Pretty dud.
Voice in the night crying. Down in the old sleeping Spanish city, darkened under her white stars.
Good Lord. Do you remember that?
Yes. Would you like to meet Michael, John, and see my infant?
Oh, rather.
When do you go down to Wansdon?
Tomorrow, or the day after.
Then won't you both come and have lunch tomorrow?
We'd love to.
1:30. Holly and Aunt Winifred, too. Is your mother still in Paris?
Yes. She thinks of settling there.
Well, John, things fall on their feet, don't they?
They do.
Do you remember our walk at Wansdon?
I remember everything, Fleur.
So do I. Well, Michael's the best male I know.
Anne's the best female.
How fortunate, isn't it? God, were we young fools?
I don't see that. It was natural.
It was beautiful.
We're not children now, John. Well, I must talk about sides of bacon with Holly. Till tomorrow, then. You'll like my house. Arrivederci.
Arrivederci.
So that's John now. Terribly like John then. He still has his sunny look. And he still admires me. Yes.
The instinct in regard to his daughter had warned Soames that Fleur was up to something when she went out secretly while he was having breakfast.
Mr. Soames.
Oh, morning, Smither.
Oh, what a pity. Miss Fleur's just gone. Nobody down yet but Mr. John.
Oh, did she see him?
Yes, sir.
Oh?
He's in the dining room if you'd like to go in.
No. By the way, I suppose that Mr. Stainford, he never came here again?
Oh, yes, Mr. Soames. He called yesterday to see Mr. Val, but Mr. Val was gone.
He did he? You didn't give him Mr. Val's address in the country.
Oh, no, sir. He knew it.
Deuce, he did.
Shall I tell the mistress you're here, Mr. Soames?
No, don't bother, Smither. Don't disturb her. Give her my love.
So, Fleur's seen that boy. The whole thing will begin all over again. I knew it. Those who breakfast alone and sleep alone as often as not. Suppose I talk to Michael. No, worse than useless. Michael's a good young fellow, and the marriage quite happy. As for that boy, presumably, he married for love, and yet there's the moon. And Fleur's always wanted the moon, always wanted what she didn't have. The whole thing, all over again.
Do have a little more.
Yes, it was in aid of the children's fund, Holly.
Well, John, what do you think of my house?
It's very like you.
Is that a compliment?
To the house, of course. I say, Michael, wasn't it strange that we met at Mount Vernon? Was Fleur with you that day?
What's this you met?
What do you remember, Fleur? The young Englishman?
The young Englishman, of course. Mount Vernon is lovely, but you ought to see Richmond, Anne. What do you think, Holly? We could go after lunch.
Oh, yes. That sounds great.
You haven't been to Richmond for ages, I expect, Aunt Winifred.
Not for years, dear.
We could take in Robin Hill on the way home, John.
Your old home, John? Oh, do let's.
There's the potentate who bought it.
Oh, he's at Monte Carlo. I read it in the papers yesterday. Could you come, Michael?
Afraid I've got a committee. Anyway, the car can only manage five.
It's a very pretty view.
Beautiful.
In this mid-May fine weather, the view from Richmond Hill had all the width and leafy charm which had drawn so many Forsytes in phaetons and barouches and hansom cabs and motor cars from immemorial time. Or at least, from the days of George the Fourth.
Oh, isn't it too lovely, John? It's sort of romantic.
And so to the park.
Ah, the chestnuts.
Val and I used to race down that avenue.
Oh, look, Anne. That's where I threw myself off my pony as a kid when I lost my stirrup and got so bored with being bumped.
And we must look at the rhododendron.
Oh, yes.
They're all being fun.
Oh, look at those deer. Aren't they just sweet?
There's the log we used to jump. Still there.
Chestnut blossoms. Ah, time.
John, what are you going to do to get in at Robin Hill?
Well, tell the butler I want to show my wife where I lived as a boy, of course.
In Irene's rose garden, which had replaced old Jolyon's fernery, buds were forming, but only one rose was out.
I believed you and I would live here one day, John, and watch the roses bloom and the old oak tree drop its leaves.
Oh, look there.
There's the grandstand
next. Oh, yes, I see. I thought we'd point that out together to our guests. Now I can't even walk beside you. You have to play guide to that girl. Your wife. I must get him alone.
Let's go down through the meadow, John.
Doesn't the house look grand from here, Anne?
Oh, it's all so English.
Listen. The cuckoo, John.
The coppice. Still here at the bottom of the field.
A fallen log. And all those bluebells still under the larch trees.
Yes. Still there.
Beside Fleur, John stood still. Yes. And the spring stood still.
It was here we came on your mother, John, and our stars were crossed. Oh, John.
Fleur.
Your face.
Fleur jumped onto the log.
No ghosts, my dear.
No ghosts.
Fleur put her hands on John's shoulders and jumped out.
Let's wade into the bluebells, John. That bird repeats himself.
In episode 14 of the Foresight Chronicles, Galsworthy was Dirk Bogard. Soames, Alan Howard, Fleur, Amanda Redman, Michael, Gary Bond, and John, Gary Cady. Belinda Lang played Marjorie Farrar, Fiona Walker, Winifred, Stuart McGugan, Sir Alex McGowan, Catherine Fershpan, Anne, and Christopher Scott, Stainford. Foskison was played by Brian Miller, Bulfrey, Gerard Green, Justice Brain, Danny Schiller, Francis, Simon Treves, Val, Dale Rapley, Holly, Elizabeth Mansfield, Annette, Shelley Thompson, Mrs. Maltese, Sue Broomfield, and Mrs. Pinrin and Smither, Joe Kendall. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The pianist was Mary Nash, and the director was Sue Wilson.